This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much. Welcome to our eighth meeting of the Ombudsman Design Team meeting on Monday, 26th of September at 13 UTC. The proposed agenda is to do the roll call, to have some feedback from the Workstream 2 plenary, discussion on the transparency with the rapporteur of the drafting team. Hopefully will join us, Michael, Cara, Nicolas, and then to go back to some issue we were discussing in our document, stress test, with Cheryl Langdonor, and maybe if he's able to join Steve Del Bianco, some discussion about ATRT2 and where we are with PTI, and discuss about the next meeting. Just to check with staff, do you have my the PowerPoint I send you? I don't know, 1 or 2 hours ago. And if you have it, can you put it in the screen, please? And for everybody, I got trouble with talking with people because I lost not only my mail but also my contact information, and I have to find a way to find some mail when I don't have the update of the mail, and it is still bothering me a lot. Then I have some trouble to prepare this meeting, and sorry for that. Yes, please.
Hi, this is Brenda Sebastian. I did not see a PowerPoint come through from you in the last few hours. I'm in the missing mailbox, MSFI mailbox, and there's nothing.
Yes,
there.
It's MSI mailbox.
We had the agenda from you, but I didn't see anything attached to the agenda.
It was 12:31 from Paris time when I sent it to you, to MSSI Secretariat.
Okay. One moment. I'll get that uploaded. Thank you.
Thank you. I must have done that before, but sorry. Okay, then roll call. We will take the people who are on Adobe. If there are people just online, please tell us now, and we will add you to the list of the participants.
Sebastian, it's Cheryl here. I'm not in the AC room. I hope to join once I get something started up shortly. This meeting is running in exactly the same time as another meeting I can part of my attention.
Okay, Cheryl, but you know, everybody know you, and when you are in a phone, they know that it's your phone, and then you are in the Adobe room. Even if you don't see it, we can see you, then that's good. Therefore, as we have a topic where we need you, just tell me when it's a good time. I will not call on you, but when you are ready to give us some time to discuss the stress test, we will come to this issue straight on to allow you to do your other obligation. Thank you. Okay. To answer one question sent by Avery, if she sends a list, maybe you don't send the list, but I have incorporated all those elements in the document. And on the last document I sent, the version 5, I didn't work on any new version yet. All was incorporated. But thank you very much for your input. It was, and it is still very useful. Okay, let's go to the presentation. I had some pages, but we already talked about the agenda. The participant and observer, same list. Our meetings, just to follow on. And now the first item, it's what was done at the plenary. I had prepared a presentation, and unfortunately, both in the preparatory meeting and in the plenary, no time were available for inputs from different groups. I guess that I was one completely cut. I guess Ed Morris was also completely cut. We discussed about other items by the 2 hours. We talk about the transition and where we are, and it takes some time. We discuss the issue of Workstream 1, and Becky take us through the document she's writing with the team. And at the end of the meeting, the 2 hours passed. I have asked the co-chair to not wait 3 weeks to have the next meeting, and the next meeting will be the 4th of October, and I hope to be able to ask them the question, or at least part of the question I had for the plenary. The main question was about what we will discuss again, the role of the ombuds regarding PTI. Everything linked with AT-AT2, it will need to be reviewed because the CCWG on accountability is still waiting for an answer by the board of where they are and where we need to be involved to be sure that we both agree on what we have to do. And that's part of the question. And I was not able to deliver any presentation, unfortunately, to the plenary due to time constraint. Any comment on that, or question, ideas? If not, let's go to the next page. I didn't change the document too much, but I, after discussion with you, I changed some titles. You have here the list of the chapter titles, and to be sure that it's clear when I write IOO and not 100, it's ICANN Ombuds Office. We like acronym. I found that we need to have one, and I took IOO. As you know, we have liaison to the group, and for this meeting, we will spend some time with Michael, because he writes us some inputs, and I would like very much to have exchange with him. And I guess he's online. Yes, great. Then I will. It's the mail he sent to us earlier today. And Michael, may I ask you to talk about that? It will be better than to hear just my voice during this call, and as you write it, and what are the questions we need to answer or discuss in this group, please. Thank you very much. For the moment, we can't hear you, Michael. Okay. Now I heard a noise, and I think you will be the one talking, hopefully. Not yet.
Sorry, is it fixed now?
Yes, great. Go ahead, Michael. And for the other, if you can turn off your mic during the conversation, it will be great. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Michael.
Sure. So for the record, this is Michael Karanikolas. Thanks very much for that introduction, Sebastian, and great to meet all of you. So I hadn't really prepared a formal presentation per se, but just as a way of introduction, I'm one of the two rapporteurs for the transparency work stream. And I wanted to get in touch mostly because I think there's a strong overlap between what we're looking at and your area of research, specifically because one of the main both complaints about the current transparency system and considerations in terms of improving it is in the appeals and oversight mechanism, whereby if you feel that ICANN is doing something wrong or if they refuse a document disclosure request, you appeal to the ombudsman. My background, which is coming from governmental right to information systems, an appeals and oversight system is critical to making an effective transparency system work. Without an ombudsman, there's no way of ensuring that there will be proper institutional compliance. There's no way of ensuring that employees of ICANN are interpreting provisions correctly in terms of transparency or disclosing what they're supposed to and are taking an adequately broad understanding of the public's right to information. So that's sort of the perspective that we're coming at this from. And obviously, as part of our analysis, we're looking at how the oversight system can be improved. Currently, because appeals go to the ombudsman, that's going to be very closely connected to what you guys are looking at. We, as part of the transparency subgroup, we may end up with a recommendation that rather than sending appeals to the ombudsman, that there should be a separate independent oversight body set up. That's sort of something that's been batted around a bit, so that to set up a parallel organization just to hear transparency appeals, in which case I guess the overlap would be less between what we're doing and what you're doing. But because currently we're working within the same system, it's still a consideration. So with that being said, looking at the documents that Sebastian circulated, there was a few sort of discussion questions that came up. I sort of drafted these basically as a way of raising some new issues for consideration. Issues that come to mind from my perspective is examining what a strong information oversight body should be, which I think are probably also germane to this conversation. One of them is whether the ombudsman has the sufficient independence and competency to perform their task. When I talk about competence, I don't mean that it's an incompetent person, but what I mean is that whether they have a specific information, specific skills to deal with the issues that are coming across their desk. So, for example, understanding transparency and the right to information requires a very specific skill set. We look for an information commissioner or a human rights commissioner who's dealing with this to have a background in journalism or information management or law or something specific like that. And I'm not sure if the ombudsman, not only whether the present one has that particular skill set, I actually have no idea about that, but generally whether there are requirements in appointing the ombudsman to look for that particular skill set and whether that's a particular consideration, so whether they have experience. I look at this specifically in terms of transparency, but presumably that would apply equally to the other areas that the ombudsman has to examine. And, of course, that raises the challenge of having a general use ombudsman, which is whether or not you have a person who has the expertise in every area that they're that's going to come across their desk. There's consideration. We want to raise the issue as well about the ombudsman's independence and powers and expertise. Independence is a tricky one because generally, again, I'm coming at it from a governmental perspective where, you know, there's more of a of an established way to build up independent institutions within an organization like ICANN. It's more challenging because systems of democratic accountability are different. But we look specifically about the relationship between the ombudsman and the board, the requirement that the ombudsman has to request authority from the board prior to starting an investigation sort of raised a bit of a flag for me as it might potentially undercut their level of independence. And I also wanted to raise considerations of expanding the ombudsman's role to be more proactive. And again, this comes at it, this has its basis in my background from the governmental side where the best information commissioners and information commissions have a role not only in assessing compliance with the law and in hearing appeals, but actively promoting transparency within the organization and externally. So it should be promoting their role and saying, hey, we have an ombudsman. This is what I, you know, reaching out to people to see if they have inputs or to see if they have issues that should be improved, reaching out to people to encourage use of the DIDP system and to sort of promote the fact that ICANN's a transparent organization and to tout the ability of people to request information. So the idea lower down and the second from the bottom that the ombudsman would play a promotional role to educate the public about his office and about ICANN's DIDP mechanism are considerations. And I also, again, just wanted to inject a bit of a broader consideration of what the ombudsman does, not just in comparison to parallel ombudsmen, but again, coming at it from a quasi-governmental perspective, to think about it against what human rights commissioners do, what information commissioners do, what these sort of general oversight roles do in a public sector context, and how we would want to see those ideas manifested in ICANN, which is not a governmental organization, but I think we should be pushing for a more, at least in terms of the transparency system, for expectations which are more in line with a governmental organization than we would see as being in line with a private sector organization or potentially even an intergovernmental organization. So that's sort of a brief introduction to my thoughts on this issue, and I welcome discussion.
Thank you very much, Michael, and very interesting inputs and thought, and I am sure that it will give some good possibility for discussion. Please, any comment or question to Michael or ideas? Yes, go ahead, please.
Merci, Sébastien. Thank you, Michael. Very interesting perspective. I'm not going to go into a full-blown discussion on your comments because I think we could probably discuss these issues for days. But for the group, the Ombuds working group, I think one of the critical points that you bring up is the balance between informality and formality. So the organization is going to have to choose kind of one or the other, because as you get towards the middle of the continuum, the roles and the authority starts to get a little bit muddled. So if you want the informality of an ombudsman's office, then you accept the fact that only recommendations can be made, and there's a kind of a moral organizational conscience behind the office. As you move more towards the role of commissioners, human rights, information, ethics, their governments have them. Not every government department or government in the world has some form of the various commissioners. Then you're moving much more into a structured authority where decisions and recommendations are not something that an organization would have really the leeway of of accepting or rejecting. So there may very well be in the organization the place for the equivalent of a commissioner. I think the weights and balances and the cost involved for when you look at it as an organization, ICANN is relatively small, a couple of hundred employees. The community is huge, but you have to balance the impact of having external mechanisms that are 100% independent and the value that that adds to the organization. I think that has to be weighed against the impact that it would have both fiscally and administratively on the organization. So these are the things that I think the group is going to have to look at a little bit more in depth. Basically, the informality versus formality and the fact of having all of these external commissioners or trying to blend that into the ombudsman's role, it kind of moves the ombudsman from an informal voice of the people to a structured watchdog over the organization. And I don't think that's the role of an ombudsman. Very interesting comments you made, and I look forward to hearing some of the other input from the group and from the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Sébastien speaking. Fazi, do you want to talk? Because you put some inputs in the chat. It will be great if you agree to talk, and then I will go to Michael. If you can take the mic, Fazi, now, or just let me know.
Hi, sorry.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Good. Yes, very well. Go ahead, please.
Okay, great. So I agree with Herb. These are especially the kind of giving the ombudsman a very proactive role that could eventually lead to his or her becoming a kind of like a watchdog, or it will not, I don't think it's optimal, and I don't think it really fits the definition of ombudsman. And it will take away the informality and what we really a treasure in the ombudsman is the informality and the neutrality even. So if we give the ombudsperson, and I keep saying ombudsman, we should say ombudsperson probably, if we give the ombudsperson a proactive role, I think there will be neutrality concerns. And I would say that the ombudsman perhaps should talk about their role and what they do and what the office does and the jurisdiction of the office and all these things, so that the ICANN community knows where to go if they have a problem. But I'm in doubt of giving them like a proactive role to look at the DIDP and all these things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alanette, and Michael, please, you have your hand raised. Go ahead.
Sure. I hadn't realized that the ombudsman's actually here, which is fantastic. And I just wanted to comment on a couple of things, particularly in terms of the distinction between a formal and an informal role, because this is an argument that has come up quite a lot of different governmental structures, specifically in Canada, but we hear it all the time, that there's concern among human rights commissioners that pushing them towards order-making power or the ability to make binding resolutions will restrict their ability to play an informal resolution process. And I do want to say that that can be a false choice, because what we see that can work very well is to have informal processes like mediation or dispute resolution, which lead into a binding one or are backstopped by a more formal process. And what we've found at the governmental level, at least, is that having that stronger powers in the background of what an ombudsman does tends to boost their ability to take those informal steps, because it leads to government actors, at least, taking their recommendations more seriously and feeling a stronger power associated with the office and stronger authority associated with the office. So I do want to note that it's not necessarily a choice between one or the other, that you do have mixed systems which operate in a lot of different countries. Sometimes the opening of a complaint starts with an informal dispute resolution process, which then leads into a more formal binding process if the dispute resolution process doesn't work, and that having that binding process in the background can increase the ability to get it to get a satisfactory resolution at the outset. So I do want to just note that idea. You know, in terms of the cost and the administrative impact, those are certainly fair considerations. I mean, it's not, you know, that's something that has to be considered in the broader context of ICANN's budget. I'm not sure why having a more formal process would necessarily be, or having a formal process in the background would necessarily raise the cost that much. Of having the office, which is already there. But certainly when we talk about adding a new commissioner, that's always something that comes up. And that's, again, an argument that I've had, discussions that I've had at the governmental level a lot, where governments are always concerned about setting up a new institution. And obviously at ICANN, which is a small organization, as people say, I mean, that's a fair consideration, something to think about. Maybe as we move forward on this conversation to think about what it would cost to set up a new organization, what it would cost to add a couple of staff to the Ombudsman's office that have specialization in information management or different offices around there. In terms of the Ombudsman's role as being a voice for the people versus a watchdog, I mean, that's also a fair point. I think that it's worth considering, though, whether at the end of the day we do want to have a watchdog in place at ICANN, an organization which is empowered to look at potential malfeasance, to weigh if things are being done correctly or incorrectly. Again, these sorts of institutions are invaluable in governmental organizations, and I think it is worth considering whether something like that would be beneficial at ICANN. And again, these are just questions that I'm hoping to put out there, hoping to advance the conversation. Thanks.
Sebastian Macher speaking. Thank you, Michael. Before I give the floor to Herb, I would like to ask Herb if the third bullet point about the fact that ombudsman requests authority from the board prior to starting an investigation, is it something that it's done at ICANN, or it's something it's done differently? I am sure you have the experience and you can answer this part of the document. Was quite a bit surprising for me. Please, Herb, go ahead.
Thank you, Sebastian. Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. I'd just like to finish with Michael. The thing that popped into my mind as you were discussing the expansion of the role into more of a watchdog or into the whistleblower functions, and as you talked about human rights and information commissioners, we already have the independent review panel, which is available to review externally many of the things that ICANN does that are contested by members of the community. Would it not be possibly something you could discuss with them? And when an information pops up for document disclosure or whatever, or a human rights issue is brought to the attention of the organization, we could potentially have experts in the independent review process that could be brought in for those very specific very specific complaints rather than having it is potentially something you could discuss with the committee that's reviewing the IRP. Just a thought. As far as the request for authority from the board regarding own motion or systemic investigations, not exactly sure why. And for the record, we have never been refused a request to move forward with a systemic or own motion investigation. It's possibly more of an information to the board or putting the board on notice than actually requesting authority. It's advising the board that the office is moving forward with an own motion or a systemic issue. And as I mentioned, it's possibly something that can be reviewed when we are looking at the bylaw amendments that might come out of this, but it has never been an issue where the board has refused. And to be quite honest, if the board did refuse, I don't know if there's anything that would prevent moving forward with the investigation. The very worst they could do is fire the ombudsman with a 75% motion from the board. So it doesn't prevent the ombudsman from moving forward with an investigation and making as much noise as necessary. So I don't really think it's an issue right now. It's always been a positive experience. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? Just to answer one question in the chat, Carlos asked where can we find detail on the structure of the Ombudsman Office. If you look to the page of this group, you have various documents, and the document we are taking care of within version 5, you have a link at the end of the document with documentation of the ICANN Ombudsman Office, and you can have a look there. I think and there is a link from the ICANN site also. Very easy to go. I guess this discussion was useful. Oh, sorry. Asha, yes, go ahead, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, very well. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. So I don't have comments. So this is Asha Hemrajani for the record. I don't have comments for every single one of Michael's points here, which I thought were really good that he brought these up. I wanted to maybe just bring up a few first and then discuss the others later in detail. So on the first point about the competency and the specific expertise, I note in the text in the chat that the Ombudsman does have access to all documents, so I wanted to make that wanted to echo what was said in the chat. And as far as skills are concerned, I think I've mentioned before, I believe that mediation would be a very important skill for any ombudsman to have. At least the ones that I've looked at in different parts of Asia all seem to have mediation as a skill. The second thing is on the requesting authority from the board. I think Herb and has clarified some of that. And as far as I know, that's only happened once in my memory. And as Herb mentioned, it was the board gave that authority or acceded to that request. So the idea of the ombudsman having to regularly go to the board for authority before starting an investigation is not quite correct. It's only for very, very specific cases. And I like the idea of point number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth bullet point, which is that the Ombudsman should play a more important role or larger role to educate the community on his function and role, as well as perhaps on how the DIDP, the DIDP mechanism, actually works and what it should be used for. So I personally, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the board right now, but on my own personal behalf, speaking for myself here, that I think that is a good idea in terms of being able to let everyone understand how to use the DIDP and you know, what is the correct, or rather, what is the more appropriate occasions to invoke the DIDP. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Asha. Thank you for your inputs. Any other comments before we go to the next item? Once again, I want to thank Michael for various reasons. The first one, to give those inputs from the other subgroup, and that's very useful. And I don't know if somebody except Michael or from our group participate to the transparency one, but if you think, Michael, at one meeting you would like to have one of us participating, we can try to arrange that, and maybe also you can invite Ombuds to come to your one of your meeting. I'm sure that he will be happy to do so. That shows that maybe in other subgroup or drafting team, there are some initial thought like this one who could be useful, and I hope that we will be doing it with the other groups. I see that you have people who are, I don't know if it's new hands, but I will go to those hands. Please be short, because I would like very much to go to the next item, if possible. Then Fardy first, and Asha after. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sebastian. Just a clarification. I see in chat that there was some kind of discussion on whether Ombudsman can start investigation on its own. I am not sure if I got this right, but I never knew that Ombudsman actually can have an investigative role without having received that complaint. So if you can clarify that, if HERP can clarify that, that would be great. So could the Ombudsman actually go to board and say, I have not received any complaint, but I think this is an issue within the community we should discuss? Is that possible or not?
Thank you. Maybe I will ask Herb to answer this question, and then I will go to Asha. Herb, please.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly it. For investigations that, or complaints to come to the office from individuals or groups in the community, we have the powers to immediately investigate and move forward with whatever decision we make, mediation, and report to the board or to the committee group. So we are free to work in that environment completely. When it's a systemic issue or a known motion, which means that we move forward with something that we feel is not running properly in the organization, or that causes unfairness to a group or whatever, we can move forward without actually having a complainant. And in that case, we have to advise the board. It's in the bylaws. The word approval, I believe, is used in the bylaws, which is probably not an appropriate word. We advise the board of the issue and that we are moving forward with an investigation, and report the investigative findings to the board. I hope that makes things a little bit clearer. So specifically systemic or own motion, which means that usually a systemic, but if we have received several or many complaints regarding a very specific issue, at that point we would go to the board and say, hey, you know, we see something happening in the community that has to be dealt with, and we're dealing with it in the informal structure of the office. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. Just a point in the notes taken now, just before Herb, it was not Asha, but it was Father Net who asked the question, can the ombudsman move on an investigation without a complaint? Thank you. And now I give the floor to Asha. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sebastian. So I wanted to actually ask Michael, from the 5 points here, 6 points rather, that he has presented to us today, which one would you put on a higher priority based on your discussions in the transparency working group?
Michael, if you want to answer, will be great. Thank you.
Sorry, just unmuting. I would certainly say, stemming from this and from the conversation today, I would say the most important thing that I'd be interested in looking at moving forward is going to be the specific track that appeal processes take from the DIDP system and how the ombudsman's role in that should interact with the IRP's role. I think that's a very interesting idea. That's not something that I've looked into yet. I don't know a huge amount about the IRPs, so that's something that I have to start examining.
Sorry, Michael, your half of what you said just blanked out. I don't know why. Can you repeat that again, please?
Sure. For me, it would be not exactly a single one of these points, but rather to examine the specific role of the ombudsman in reviewing DIDB complaints and how that interacts with the IRP role and how we think it should react. I mean, the example of having one or two specific people on the IRP that have specific expertise in this issue and could be called on for that is an interesting one, and potentially one that would be cheaper than expanding the ombudsman. I would have to look more carefully at what the IRP does and how it works. But that's sort of going to be an area that I'm definitely going to focus on now. And generally speaking, it would be about the ombudsman's general role in the appeal process and whether they're currently equipped to play that role in an optimal manner, or whether there should either be a shift in the ombudsman's role to make them better equipped, or whether there should be a shift in how the process works to put it in a direction that's better equipped. I'm not sure if that sort of answers your question or if that's too vague, but that's the basic idea that for me coming out of this, that I think is a major area of examination.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Michael and Asha. Let's move to, once again, thank you for all your inputs, very, very interesting and very useful. We have 15 minutes to go, even less. On ATRT2, I guess we are waiting for the answer from the board to the letter sent by the CWG on accountability. I don't know if there are some inputs. Avery, do you have something specific on that issue, both about the review of the office or the link with ICANN employees, to add today, or do we wait for the answer from the board and input from the CCWG plenary on the 4th of October?
Hi, this is Avi speaking. I don't have any information on the board feedback. I know in terms of the employee group which is, you know, gonna look at some of these stuff. We haven't gotten there yet. So yeah, I would say that at this point, carry it. You know, we know all the items that are listed. In some sense, we can do a gap analysis and see all the ones that have not been addressed yet. And I would think that that gap would be within this group's purview to talk about and deal with, unless there's some specific, you know, comment to the contrary from the board. So at this point, I'm not sure, even though I think I started with that, I'm not sure that we necessarily need to wait. We may need to do a gap analysis of what hasn't been done, what hasn't been talked about, and therefore what looks like it's on our plate. We have a board liaison here who can take that back and say, no, 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 this is already being dealt with, et cetera. But I think maybe, you know, yes, wait, but no, do a gap analysis. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. And then we will move to the, I take your advice, and we will move to the next topic. I see that Fazanet and Michael have to leave, and thank you very much for your participation and your inputs. And I don't know if we can move to the stress test. Cheryl, when you are available and ready to talk with us about that, great. Then the floor is yours, Cheryl. And maybe if you can talk a little bit closer to your mic or whatever to be better understood, it will be great. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Sebastian. How's that for the audio?
Great. Great.
Good. Okay. Remembering that I was in two calls at once up until a second ago, so I wasn't having both microphones and earphones equally distant from everywhere. Okay, well, I shouldn't think this would take too long because there's very little indeed to say about stress tests in the Ombuds office. As you've indicated in your slide, Sebastian, there is only two references to the Ombudsman's work role and office in our stress tests from Workstream 1, that is stress test 13 and stress test 34. In stress test 13, as you will see in the slide, it's the point where one or several stakeholders excessively rely on an accountability mechanism to paralyse ICANN. In other words, they're perhaps reusing certain types of appeals, etc. The Ombuds Office was one of the, in terms of reconsideration options, listed, and it was our view in the stress testing that the Ombudsman's Office was not seen as an adequate or effective mechanism to counter that as a risk. So other counterpoints were required and needs to be developed. And on the second one, which is stress test 34, which is where stakeholders attempt to join ICANN advisory committee or support organisation, and they are encountering barriers, which is discouraging them from participation, an appeal to the Ombudsman's Office was mentioned as an option to help new entrants join ACs and SOs, and in this case it was seen as a potentially helpful office. So that is really it in a nutshell, because there's not much more than a nutshell to talk about. Open to any questions, comments or interactions.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Even if it's not a lot, it's very useful to have your presentation as you were a key actor in setting all the stress tests, and it's always useful to go to the mother mouse and to have somebody else talking about that. I see that Asha is having her hand up, and if you want, It's your turn, Asha.
That was actually for a previous... Hello?
Okay, go ahead. It's okay
Hello.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah, it's working. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. So, no, I had my hand up from the previous slide with regards to what Avery mentioned, but it's not important. I think she's already addressed what I wanted to say. So I'll come back on this point to see whether there's any board input yet. The board response, rather.
Okay, thank you. And maybe as inputs, I can, before giving the floor, Becky, during the plenary session, takes that on board and was also supposed to seek for board answers, and maybe you can also contact her and see if she has done something or where she is with that. But thank you for your help, Asha. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I've addressed SS 13 in the past, so there's no need to go on with that. But 34, I think that it's important. One of the messages I'm going to be getting out this year, over the next several months, and especially at Hyderabad, is to bring balance to the smaller groups in the ICANN community. And there are structures in place that I've been dealing with in the recent past, and that I will be looking at as I move forward, that are preventing or restricting community involvement and community inclusiveness. So one of my main focuses in the coming months is actually going to be to break down those barriers that are being restrictive or non-inclusive in many of the smaller groups, especially that where you have one portion of the group that is either more powerful in number or in financial means and has a tendency to control in a community group. I will be working hard at giving the smaller groups and the less powerful people in those groups an opportunity to use the office as a voice to raise their concerns and to hopefully break down barriers and to limit restrictive actions by some of the groups. So this Stress S 34 is something that I am actively looking at and I hope to make progress with. And I will be discussing with many of the leaders in the community groups in the near future. I'm already scheduled on a couple of calls with the executive committees and in some of the groups, and it's a message I'm going to be getting across. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Herb. Sébastien Bachelet speaking, to see it sometimes. Any other comments, inputs? Okay, we have just 4 minutes to go. Cheryl, you want to say a few last words on that issue?
No, Sébastien, I popped my excitement about what Herb said in the chat. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let's go to the next slide. I am not sure that we will have enough time to discuss that again in full, but you all have seen that there were some exchange with legal point of view and possible solution. Maybe we can have a look to the last email that Herb sent to the group, and if staff can put it on the pod, and Herb, you can give us your interpretation of this document, and I guess we will come back on that at the next meeting, because you have just 2 minutes to allow me 1 minute to close the meeting, please. Go ahead, Herb, please.
We all know how to read. So basically, PTI will fall under the Ombuds umbrella, as most community groups and organizations that are directly linked to ICANN will. But as Samantha mentions, it will be, you know, customer service complaints have the open door to the Ombudsman. Will it be a first stop or a last stop has yet to be seen, because the organization is not up and running yet. So there will be growing pains potentially, but we will be leaning much more towards the inclusive than the exclusive when it comes to dealing with PTI and any issues that come up. And they have no intention of changing the bylaws, because PTI, by its own structure, falls under the Ombuds umbrella. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Herb. To the group, I want to ask two or three questions, and we will discuss that at the next meeting. The first one, are we happy with this answer and this with this way of proceeding? Do we need to have more inputs from legal, and we will have input from the plenary, but do we need to have advice from external legal advisor or not? How do we deal, or do we deal with anything outside of the NEM function regarding PTI? That's my, I would say, my three question I want to raise. And thank you for all the work done around that, and we will come back on that during our next meeting. Just 1 minute before the end of the call, I just want to recall you that the next meeting will be in next Monday, the 3rd of October. And the 3rd of October is just before the plenary, who will be the 4th, and 3 days before any document we need to be discussed during Hyderabad need to be published. Therefore, I don't know if we want to publish something or not, but if we want, we have to be in a hurry. I guess that's all. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank you very much for your inputs. I found, and I hope you found also this meeting and those exchange very interesting, and thank you for your participation. Talk to you next week, and have a good week. The meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sebastian. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.